Electricity, a big idea that's inspired countless new ones. From powering the light bulb to virtually powering our entire lives. 30 years ago, State Street launched the Spider S&P 500 ETF, SPY. A big idea that inspired the world to invest differently. And still does. What can you do with SPY?
Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit SSGA.com for a prospectus containing this and other information. Read it carefully before investing. SPY is subject to risks similar to those of stocks. All ETFs are subject to risk, including possible loss of principal. Alps Distributors, Inc. Distributor.
Homes.com knows that when it comes to home shopping, it's never just about the house or condo. It's about the home. And what makes a home is more than just the house or property. It's the location and neighborhood. If you have kids, it's also schools, nearby parks, and transportation options. That's why Homes.com goes above and beyond to bring home shoppers the in-depth information they need to find the right home. And when I say in-depth, I'm talking deep. Each listing features comprehensive information about the neighborhood, complete with a video guide. They also have details about local schools with test scores, state rankings, and student-to-teacher ratio. They even have an agent directory with the sales history of each agent. So when it comes to finding a home, not just a house, this is everything you need to know, all in one place. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
My mission is simple: to make you money. I'm here to level the playing field for all investors. There's always a bull market somewhere, and I promise to help you find it. Mad Money starts now.
Hey, I'm Cramer. Welcome to Mad Money. Welcome to Cramerica. Other people want to make friends? I'm just trying to help you save some money. My job is not just to put in context and entertain, but to educate and teach you. So call me at 1-800-743-CNBC or tweet me at Jim Cramer. After the worst day since the crash of 87, second worst day ever, with the Dow plunging nearly 3,000 points to the lowest close in 2 years. S&P plummeting 11.98%, NASDAQ nosediving 12.32%. A truly sickening day with a horrendous last hour. It's finally dawning on people that we're in a real crisis here. I've been telling you that this pandemic could be real bad news for stocks since I came back from that Super Bowl chasing that we were underestimating the coming outbreak that could send us into a, well, I want to say a recession, because I think that it's pretty obvious that, well, that's kind of where we're going. You know, the people did underestimate the coming outbreak. And I've got to tell you that as far as I'm concerned, it really isn't one of these situations where we can just kind of ride it out. We have to think about it. We got to figure out what to do. We got to work together. And I've got some ideas. They're not simple ideas. They're ideas involving opportunity. They're ideas involving what I regard as being, let's just say, some things that happen that are good when the market goes down. But we're not ready yet. Now, first, let's talk about what went wrong here. I mean, I've been saying that we were going to underestimate this this situation. I told you that this market was headed back to lows we made the last time we were on the eve of recession, the December of 2018. We've now taken out those lows, and we can go lower because this is worse than the Fed-mandated slowdown we had back then. The market is furiously trying to adjust to the vast economic downturn that is the only way to beat COVID. And we're not there yet. The averages likely won't bottom until more people adjust to the new normal that I've been warning you about for weeks. But, and this is a big but, at this point, after the dramatic heart-stopping sell-off, maybe we got to start thinking maybe it's too late to sell unless we get a short, sharp squeeze. That was a short squeeze that we had on Friday. Yeah, but these levels, when everyone's cashing in their chips in total panic and furious redemptions, you need to start considering what to buy when the bad COVID and economic numbers come out in the next few weeks. And they're going to be bad. And look, I think one of the things that really drove the market down was when the president was talking about July. People were really saying, hey, this is great, it lasts forever. It may not do that, or it may anticipate July. So we got to be ready. So then you probably say, well, Jim, you sound more constructive than you've sounded. I mean, the market's so horrible. Well, I'm a little more constructive because unlike the last big recession, this time I find that the people in charge, the real policymakers, actually understand that something needs to be done. See, in 2007, the Fed and the White House were asleep at the wheel, totally unwilling to lift a finger to stop the oncoming disaster. This time it's different. Hey, whether you love Trump or hate him, it's not about him. Hey, everyone, I think the people want to make it about it. I'm going to take another tack. I think it's about the professionals. People like Fed Chief Jerome Powell, whom I've been critical of, but he can make more of a difference than anyone in the White House when it comes to the economy. What do I mean? All right, first, yesterday, I derived a degree of comfort from the actions of the Fed Chief that everyone seemed to poo-poo and make fun of today. I mean, give me a break. They were loving all the other stuff he was doing that I didn't like. This I liked. The Fed made some historic moves last night, and those moves worked. We knew they worked. Why? Because your bank opened for business this morning. And let me tell you something. It probably wouldn't have. All day I heard that Jerome Powell's emergency rate cuts and liquidity injections somehow failed because the stock market got obliterated. Are you kidding me? Hey, what he did was good. He wasn't trying to save the stock market, for heaven's sake. He was trying to prevent bank runs, trying to make the treasury market work. Believe me, they were going to happen. If the Fed had done this in 2007, we wouldn't have had the worst downturn since the Great Depression. Powell took another financial crisis off the table, thank heavens. There will be plenty of losses. There'll be tons of bankruptcies and ballooning unemployment. But because Powell's got his eyes on the prize, providing liquidity where it's needed, we have one less horrible thing to worry about, and that's a big horrible. Second, this morning I spoke to Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin about his plans to stabilize not the markets, but the small business base of this country. Again, people think he wants to stabilize stocks. That's not what the game's about. I want to stabilize stocks. I can't. Nobody can. But he liked what the Fed did, and he made that point that labeling something a recession doesn't really advance the ball. I like that. I mentioned that what we really have is a hiatus in business. Hopefully we'll have so much stimulus that at some point Wall Street will be able to look through the current weakness and start embracing companies with great balance sheets that can thrive when the hiatus is over or when the numbers level off. Because remember, we're trying to flatten the curve. I know it's too early for all that stuff. We've taken out the lows from December 2018, but this panic is much worse than that panic because this time there will be huge layoffs and bankruptcies. That never got to it last time because the Fed changed its view. Hopefully, though, Secretary Mnuchin and Speaker Pelosi can agree to a giant stimulus package that will tide working people over until we contain the virus. And by the way, could someone understand, the payroll tax deduction? That's great if you have a job, not if you're 1099 and not if you don't have a job. So they got to think a little bigger down there. Wish I were down there. I just knock some heads together. We get this thing straightened out. Put it all together, and I think there are real opportunities developing over. What is this, like Bernie Sanders here? Developing out there with the averages down 30% from the highs. The VIX fear gauge, highest level ever. Worst day since 87. A day that felt a lot like today when I traded it. So, yes, there are opportunities here, but they're narrow, and you won't be able to catch them using broad index funds. This is a time to pick individual winners and losers, yet 60% of stocks are owned via some sort of index fund. For years, we've been told we're morons for trying to pick stocks, and the best you can do is hope to mirror the performance of broader averages. But the problem with the index funds is that you inevitably own both the winners and losers, and the difference between winners and losers has become too stark for that to make any sense. That's where the opportunity comes in, people. There are many industries that are truly on the ropes here, and I expect them to remain on the ropes for a long time, unless they fall flat on the canvas. If you invest in S&P 500 index fund, you have to own the bad, the very bad, the disastrous, and a small group of easy to identify winners. Why own all the losers? I don't want to own any of the airline stocks because this feels a lot like the aftermath of 9/11 when nobody wanted to fly and the industry was crippled. Sure, they eventually bounced back, but only after a $15 billion bailout. We're only on maybe day three of what's looking like a total collapse in air travel. Don't try to be here or there, regardless of whether the president stands behind them 100%. I don't want to own anything aerospace either, not with Boeing struggling, debt being downgraded. That's a bad one. That's like 2007. I know. Wish it weren't so. Oil's another problem. Economic activity's drying up, and Saudi Arabia and Russia are flooding the world with supply. You don't want to own any of the oils here too soon for a bounce back. You just hope that they don't bleed into all the other parts of the finance world. Same goes for restaurants, entertainment. I just got word from New York City that we have to close our restaurant and our bar. Too many people gathering. I wish! Social distancing makes this whole group uninvestable. Penn National Gaming is the paradigm. They did this great hookup with Barstool for sports betting, but now everything's canceled and there's nothing to bet on. The stock was at $39 last month. It's at $8 today. Someone upgraded Las Vegas Sands today. Really? Retail, same problem. Nobody feels like buying anything unless they're ordering from Amazon. That will change, though. I think there will soon be so much excess inventory that the off-price houses will be able to offer cash-strapped consumers some truly incredible deals. But we're not there yet. And for the moment, the whole industry is toxic. Consider Macy's has now fallen 75%. Sports at 22.5% yield. Kohl's is down 74%, 14% yield. Nordstrom's off 63%, 9% yield, nearly. Those stocks are all screaming that the earnings are in danger and the dividends will have to be cut. Retail's a disaster, with the exception of the largest companies. I know the banks are cheap. And now that the Fed's taken action, I believe they'll come out whole, given that the Fed's willing to throw money at them. But until other people start agreeing with me, they'll be so-so investments at best. More like you fodder for the bears before the bottom. No, it's not 2009 when many of these banks were in single digits. However, they lost their principal support when they pledged to stop buying back stock. Let that sink in. Autos, oh, please. least. Auto parts, no. Suppliers, no. Commodity chemicals, no. Paper, no. Steel, no. You think maybe I'm too bearish? I don't know. Well, let's listen to Jim Fitterling, the excellent CEO of Dow Chemical, later in the show. Tech, too hard. Hey, probably too soon, although I said last week buying the fastest growing techs is often the best way to play a spring-loaded rebound. But you have to be prepared to lose money before we get there, and I bet you 99% of you aren't willing to, and you better start learning how to do it. With all these sectors that are too tough to own, if the data's just getting going to get worse, and it is, and we're going to see the denominator get big, all that other stuff, it's like, geez, it's like algebra. Why am I telling you to be opportunistic? Okay, did you know that the makers of literally everything you might find in the supermarkets saw their stocks drop in unison this morning? They got hammered because they're part of the indices. Then the stock pickers came in, the packaged food companies rallied furiously on the ugliest day in ages, and so many of the drug stocks did. While they gave back their gains in the late afternoon, some of them closed up big. I like ConAgra. I know, needle in a haystack, but come on, we look for needles. What do we do here? Okay, I think we're going to get some big coronavirus numbers now that we're really going to test people's strength in earnest. We're going to get more lockdowns like in San Francisco where you may not even be able to shop, although I think grocery stores will still be open. We'll hear horrendous reports from every part of the country because we underestimated how bad it was going to be. But, well, some of us did. But today gave us a template for what works when the economy's on hiatus. The stocks of companies that make products we can't live without. Check out your medicine cabinet. Check your refrigerator. Look at your pantry. Bottom line, on a horrific day where the averages were down 12 to 13%, we got to stop buying average. Instead, we should buy quality recession-proof stocks because that's what works when the economy's on hiatus. Time to hold your nose and buy a couple of winners. Get started. As for the losers, I say no more selling. No more selling without a big update like we had on Friday to get you better prices than you can expect into the teeth of this panic. Let's go to Jay in Ohio, please, Jay.
Booyah, Jim. How's it going?
Well, Jay, I've had slightly better days, but, you know, I'm still around. How about you?
I'm doing well. Thank you. Good. Hey, I got a quick question for you. Interested in adding silver or gold into my portfolio, trying to diversify up my investments? Just wanted to get your thoughts about the precious metal market right now and which is the best way to invest in coins.
Well, people have given up on the precious metals because they think that we're in a terrible deflationary storm. And I say, you know what? I always find room for gold. I think that you want to own gold, and I don't mind that gold is going down. I think you buy some right into this weakness. I actually think that Barrick Gold bottomed, and that's the way I would do it, is by G-O-L-D. All right, guys, you don't need to. I mean, it's a brutal tape, right? Stick to the quality recession-proof stocks as they come down. This is what you have to buy into those openings when we're frozen down 7%. That's what worked. It'll work again. On Mad Tonight, America's capacity to detect the coronavirus will get a big bump from Thermo Fisher after it received an emergency okay to produce up to 5 million test kits a week. I've got the exclusive with the CEO. Then the head of CVS Health met with Trump last week to discuss the ways to combat the coronavirus. I'm going to talk about the company's latest initiatives. And in the teeth of demand-crushing global pandemic, how is a company like Dow positioning itself? I'm talking with the CEO. So stay with Cramer.
Don't miss a second of Mad Money. Follow at Jim Cramer on Twitter. Have a question? Tweet Cramer. Hashtag Mad Tweets. Send Jim an email to madmoney@cnbc.com or give us a call at 1-800-743-CNBC. Miss something? Head to madmoney.cnbc.com.
Fact. Running a business is not getting easier on your wallet. With higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. Also a fact, smart businesses are reducing costs and headaches by graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, and HR into one platform and one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, accessed from anywhere. You can cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. You improve efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. See how you'll profit with NetSuite, and then you can think of all the ways you could be spending the money you save. Company retreat in Malibu, anyone? By popular demand, NetSuite is offering a one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to NetSuite.com to start saving.
When you're hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging to connect with candidates faster. Plus, 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Mad Money. Just go to Indeed.com/Mad Money right now and support this show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Mad Money. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Until this pandemic is contained or just burns itself out, COVID-19 is in the driver's seat. It's a very bad driver. There's nothing more important than getting this crisis under control. That's how we save lives, and it's how we resuscitate the economy, too. But we can't contain this virus until we know who has it. And what are the characteristics of those who have it? The thing is, we can't know who has it until we ramp up our diagnostic infrastructure. There just haven't been enough test kits here in the United States. Fortunately, on Friday, the FDA issued special emergency use authorization for two new tests for Roche and Thermo Fisher Scientific, which is a company you know we like very much. Thermo Fisher is a longtime Cramer fave. It's the number one maker of life science instruments and lab equipment. Think of them as an arms dealer to the biopharma industry. I think the stock is enticing here. It's down more than 60 bucks from its highs. More importantly, they're a huge part of the fight against COVID-19. So let's take a close up with Mark Casper. He's the chairman and CEO of Thermo Fisher Scientific. Learn more about the diagnostic breakthrough that he has. Mr. Casper, welcome back to Mad Money.
Jim, thank you for having me today, and I really appreciate the opportunity to talk to you. And let me start, Jim, by just thanking my colleagues at Thermo Fisher that have been engaged around the world in addressing this this pandemic.
Well, Mark, I have to tell you, when I saw the press release, I said, oh, they got the professionals involved. You know how much respect I have for your company. How did this come about, and how are you able to produce the numbers? I mean, I know a lot of people feel like we were caught flat-footed or whatever, but I don't really care about that. I care about where things are going, not where they came from. You were able to produce something that really could save a lot of people's lives.
So, Jim, you know, once the outbreak started in China, our teams mobilized to actually start to develop a test. And during the course of the last month, we've been working on that. Once in the U.S., the state of emergency was declared about a month ago. By the Secretary of Health and Human Services, we actually started working very closely with the FDA and collaborating. We're able to get that authorization from the FDA to have our test on Friday of last week.
All right, so where will we see Thermo Fisher's tests?
Jim, can you say that again? I apologize.
Where will we see these tests? Are they going to be part of when we're at Walmart, parking lot, or is it our doctor's office, emergency rooms?
Yeah, so what you'll see, these tests will be at the laboratories across the country. The protocol here is we'll be shipping to about 200 laboratories. We've actually started that process across the country. Samples will be collected at either your doctor's office or at a testing center, depending on what's available locally. Those samples will then be brought to a laboratory, and each state will know which laboratories have the tests. And then once the process starts, it's about 4 hours from the receipt of the test at a laboratory to actually getting a result.
So I will know. I take a test at 10 with a Thermo Fisher instrument, and I might know, say, by 3 o'clock whether I have this or not?
Yeah, what's going to determine the time is how quickly the sample can get to the laboratory. And what the backlog is in the lab. But once that testing starts, in 4 hours, you'll know the answer.
Why is this the best test?
You know, it is a test that can be distributed across the country and around the world, and the labs know that it is high quality and reliable, and it simplifies their workflows tremendously. So it is really a proven technology that we've worked on in other diseases in the past, whether it was H1N1 or Zika, things of that sort. So we're experienced in doing this.
The numbers that you're talking about making are staggering. How do you have the equipment? How do you have the supplies on hand to make this many?
So we have already about 1.5 million tests in stock, and we began shipping them yesterday and today. So that's what's currently in stock. But we're ramping up to about 2 million tests of production a week. And then over the course of April, we'll be able to get that to about 5 million tests a week in terms of production. So a very dramatic ramp up. We have very large factories to make these tests, Jim.
Do you think that, look, you're not Dr. Fauci, whom we all adore, but should everyone take one, or is it really you should think of maybe you have a pre-existing illness, you're elderly, and that someone, say, in their 40s or 50s that has a cold should not, in your opinion, take one?
So I think in this case, it's very straightforward. You follow the government guidelines of, you know, whether you have symptoms and what risk profile you are, and you follow those procedures to determine whether you should be taking the test or not. And that's, you know, how I would think about it for myself as well.
Is there much difference between your test and the Roche test?
You know, there's only one competitor out there, and that's the virus. And right. The more tests available for the public, Jim, is really what the important thing is. And you have tests from ourselves, you have tests from Roche, and you also have some home lab-developed tests as well. And expanding that capacity so that it's across the country and in other countries as well is super important in addressing the virus.
Okay, one of the things that I hate him or like him, President Trump brought together a lot of different executives in what I think is a very quick partnership. Are you happy with the way things are going now, the public-private partnership? Is it what you would want? I've known you for a long time. You're an exacting person who wants to do things right. Are we getting it right?
Yeah, the thing that I thought was super encouraging from my perspective is that the FDA collaborated throughout the process, worked literally around the clock with us, but they never reduced the standards, right? They wanted to make sure that, you know, everything was clinically validated, you know, and make sure it's safe and reliable for the American people. And that's exactly what I would want. And it's been a very collaborative process, and I'm very appreciative of it.
But this is rapid fire, right? I mean, this is something that you've never seen before. I'm not saying that they're not rigorous. I am saying that there is an element that we should feel a little bit good about as Americans that you got this thing together this quickly.
Yeah, I'm very proud of the collaboration. And, you know, we had executives from the lab companies that do the testing and companies like ourselves that supply them. And the government asked, what do we need to be, you know, as fast as we can? And it's been a very collaborative process from that perspective.
So do you talk to Dr. Fauci?
I did not in that case. I did work with the head of the CDC and the head of the FDA.
And just in general, because I have you did a Qiagen. You did this fantastic acquisition. And I know that I don't want to conflate lives with money, but I just want to congratulate. It seems like I know it just happened, but it's a great idea for Thermo to do that, correct? Obviously.
Yeah, Jim, you know, we, as you know, have a proven growth strategy, and we invest to create a bright future and strengthen our offering for our customers. And earlier this month, we announced a large acquisition, about $11 billion acquisition to strengthen our molecular diagnostics and life science solutions portfolio. And we look forward to next year welcoming our 5,000 new colleagues from Qiagen to the company. It'll be an exciting addition. And one of the things that particularly will be very positive is that they will strengthen our infectious disease portfolio, which I think is something that will be very important going forward.
Right. That's right. I mean, people think, oh, Kramer's trying to recommend this stuff. No, I saw what they do. They have TB. They have a lot of very tough stuff. And yet it was just still one more great acquisition that you have done, Mark Casper. And you've done a fabulous job with Thermo Fisher. Thank you so much for coming on the show. I really appreciate it.
Jim, thank you for having me today.
Look, we can be gloomy. No, I'm not like that. I just saw Mark Casper. When I heard that he was involved with us, I said, that guy is a hitter. You know, we do have hitters in this country. We're not a total, you know, we can get this. We can beat this. Things like Thermo Fisher. And money's back in the break.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. You can earn 4 times points on your top 2 eligible spending categories every month, like transit, U.S. restaurants, and gas stations. That's the powerful backing of American Express. 4 times points on up to $150,000 in purchases per year. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. So you need a business partner just like you. Like FedEx, who understands your passion for serving your customers because they have the same commitment towards you. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. What's more, FedEx Ground is faster to more locations than UPS Ground. Trust FedEx for timely deliveries. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively FedEx.
Even though this has been another terrible, horrible, no good, very bad day, we don't want to forget the Friday afternoon's big Rose Garden event at the White House. President Trump gave us the first stage of a plan that will hopefully help us mitigate the damage from the coronavirus outbreak. He announced a set of public-private partnerships between the government and some of our nation's largest companies, and I like that. Okay, so it wasn't exactly the Marshall Plan that I've been calling for, but it's absolutely a step in the right direction. There were some big names up there, including one of our favorites, CVS Health, which will be donating space in its parking lots nationwide for COVID-19 testing. On top of that, CVS has rolled out a series of initiatives to help with the outbreak, broadening access to medication, telemedicine visits, working with local governments to take care of patients who show up with coronavirus symptoms at the company's Minute Clinics locations, and, of course, bending over backwards to keep their employees safe and their shelves stocked. Long story short, as a major drugstore and a major health insurer, remember, they own Aetna. This company's an essential player in any kind of response to this pandemic. So let's check in with Larry Merlo. He's the president and CEO of CVS Health to learn more about his company's contributions to the cause. Mr. Merlo, welcome back to Mad Money.
Jim, great to be here.
All right, Larry, give us some perspective. Give us some context. Where are we in this pandemic, and what is CVS doing to help us?
Well, Jim, first of all, we're in a unique position to help address the pandemic, given our physical presence in communities all across the country and the ability to reach millions of consumers with local solutions. And, you know, you think about the health, the safety of our customers, our client members, and certainly our CVS colleagues. That's our number one priority, and we're taking the necessary steps to ensure their well-being. And we've got key leaders across each of our business units. They're working to maintain business continuity in order to meet the needs of consumers, clients, and communities we serve. And, you know, we ask ourselves every day, is there more that we can do? And, you know, Jim, I think we're in the early stages. I think we've seen from, you know, Dr. Fauci and other clinicians that, you know, we have the risk of this getting worse before it gets better.
Right.
But, you know, there's a lot that is being done in many places, many industries across the country to, you know, to gain control and put this behind us.
So, Larry, do you envision a world where in one of your multiple CVSs there'll be some sort of line, like almost like a car wash, I guess, where you can get a quick test? Is that the right appearance that I've got in my brain?
Well, you know, Jim, as a leader in healthcare, we've had regular contact with White House key leadership on the Hill. And I think it's important to acknowledge that as we sit here today, this is no longer about politics. It's not about competition. It's about companies working together to be part of the solution. And in this case, how we can make testing more broadly available. And, you know, we've had a series of calls throughout the weekend, again today, working out the details. And the testing would take place in secure areas of parking lots, not inside stores. And individuals being tested will not have to leave their cars. I think one of the important things, Jim, that has been discussed is, you know, defining the testing protocol and the fact that, you know, the individuals that would be prioritized would be healthcare workers, first responders, and those over 65 with the symptoms of fever and respiratory distress. But, you know, many details have been worked through, but there's more details that need to be developed to get these sites up and running, as well as working with the state officials to accomplish that as well.
Okay, today Rite Aid had an analyst meeting. They talked about their same store sales, and it does seem that the combination of what you guys do for a living plus your excellent Caremark division for Longmont for largest mail operations in the world, which I use, that this is kind of no one's a profiteer, but your combination of the same store sales and the Aetna must be producing some. Something that's pretty good for CVS.
Well, Jim, we have certainly, in our retail business, we've seen a very large demand across a wide range of items and categories. That, no surprise, cleaning supplies, sanitizers, people restocking their medicine cabinets. And, you know, we're in daily contact with our suppliers and looking at creative ways to fulfill that demand as we respond to orders. There's going to be some spot shortages of product, but you know, we're doing everything that we can to get that product to the shelf as quick as we can. Yeah, and you move over, Jim, to, you know, to our Aetna business. We've taken probably five important steps when you think about the combination of CVS and Aetna. First of all, we've waived charges for home delivery that enable individuals to receive their needed medications and products while remaining in the comfort of their home. Mm-hmm. We've waived out-of-pocket costs for all diagnostic testing related to COVID-19 for our Aetna members. We're offering zero copay telemedicine visits for, you know, Aetna members, not just specific to COVID-19, but with the goal of limiting potential exposure in physician offices. We've waived early refill limits on maintenance medications. We're offering 90-day maintenance refills for insured and Medicare members. And, you know, finally, we have a program that's that we call Aetna's Healing Better Program. And members who are diagnosed with the virus will receive a care package containing CVS OTC medications to help relieve symptoms, along with cleaning supplies to help keep others in the home protected from exposure. So there's a lot of activities, Jim, going on. You know, no question, again, we're seeing a lift in retail traffic, but we're also incurring additional costs with the various initiatives that we're implementing, such as waiving copays or eliminating out-of-pocket costs.
All right. And also, Larry, are we able to feel somewhat confident about the supply chain for our drugs, given the reliance on China?
Yeah, Jim, great question. And, you know, we have not experienced any disruption to date, and we have been in close contact with our suppliers. They actually tend to carry, on average, a 3 to 6 month supply. Jim, you think about the fact today that about 90% of all the prescriptions that are dispensed across the country are generics. And, you know, we do have the size and scale through our partnership with Cardinal Health. We created the Red Oak sourcing model. And as a result, we've actually been able to diversify our generic supply chain so that we're not dependent on any one manufacturer for a particular product.
All right. That is great news, because a lot of us are we're quite concerned about that. Finally, are you happy about where things are? That's the wrong word. Do you think things are going okay with between the public partnership and private partnership with the government and with your company and others?
Well, you know what, Jim, as I mentioned earlier, this isn't about competition. It's about companies working together, you know, against a common cause, you know, looking for a solution. We've been in constant communication with government officials. I think it's clear that all parties are focused on solutions. And I think it's also clear, Jim, that the public-private partnerships continue to be a powerful force in times of need, and that's certainly what we're experiencing with the virus.
Oh, I'm so glad you said that, Larry. The cynicism is so deep. You know, I think that business is the greatest source of social change in this country. It's companies like what you're doing that are great. I want to thank Larry Merlo, President and CEO of CVS Health, symbol CVS. Great to see you, sir, or to talk to you at least. Mad Money's back after the break. In a market this ugly, you know, I think it's tempting to start picking some of those beaten down stocks, especially the ones with what I call AHYs. That's accidentally high yielders. But if you're going to start buying dividend stocks on the way down, there's one important caveat. You got to make sure that the dividend is money good, because if it's not safe, well, then you can get clobbered. Which brings me to the new Dow Inc. That's the commodity chemical maker that was spun off a year ago as part of the Dow-DuPont merger/breakup. Over the past month, this stock has been obliterated, losing more than half of its value, because the commodity chemical business is highly cyclical, meaning it's very sensitive to changes in the economy. Thanks to the sell-off, Dow now sports an eye-popping 12.7% dividend yield. Wowza. At these levels, you got to wonder if the stock's too cheap to ignore. But we need to make sure the dividend is safe before we can even consider owning something like this into the teeth of what looks to be a big global recession. So let's take a closer look with Jim Fitterling. He's the CEO of Dow Inc. to get a better read on how his company's weathering a very tough environment. Mr. Fitterling, welcome back to Mad Money.
Thanks for having me, Jim. Nice to talk to you.
Always good to talk to you, Jim. And I've got to tell you, the market is saying that your dividend is not sustainable because Dow's related to the price of oil, because Dow's related to giant cyclical portions of the economy, and that because the coronavirus is going to make it so you will have much less business. You're a worldwide company. You've already seen what happens in China. You're familiar with what's going on in Europe. Why is the market perhaps wrong about that judgment?
Well, our demand is good right now, Jim. And in fact, the last 2 weeks, we've seen our demand in China bounce back. And so I think when you consider that that coronavirus incident started in really in February for them, and we've already started to see a recovery from that, I think that tells us that we can see the same thing wash through the economy here. When it gets to the dividend, I think people need to remember that we took a lot of actions in 2019 as we came out as the new Dow. We paid down $3 billion worth of debt. We also just recently tapped the Eurobond market for 2.25 billion euros of 1% debt, which we used to move our debt maturities out till the end of 2023. We started the year with 2.4 billion of cash. Our dividend is 2.1 billion for the year. And we've got tailwinds this year of another billion, which we have lower transaction costs this year versus last, and another billion of non-operating cash impact items. So I think what people are looking at, you know, the market's full of fear, uncertainty, and doubt, and they may project that onto the dividend. But as you said, it's an artificially high dividend yield. We're in a much, much different financial position than we've been. And we did it deliberately to be ready to go into a down cycle after about a 10 to 11 year bull run in this market.
Now, can you explain to people the relationship with oil? And also, have you oil tested your dividend, so to speak? So if oil were to drop to, say, 25, 23, would it still be OK to pay that size dividend?
We did. We stress tested our operating EBITDA as we went into the new Dow and we spun out and we tested that dividend. We tested it as low as a $6 billion EBITDA. And, you know, today, if it went to $5 billion, we've stress tested it and we'd be able to protect it at that level. We've got very clear priorities for cash as we go into the year. Our first is the dividend. Our second is obviously we're going to maintain and operate the assets. So that's $800 million to $1 billion for us to do that, to operate them safely and reliably. And then obviously we would like to pay down another $500 million to $1 billion of debt with cash. We're going to cover dilution and share buybacks, and then we'll look at what we've got available as we move from here. And the other thing I would say is CapEx is one of those things. We started the year with a $1.5 billion CapEx program. That's down from last year at $2 billion. I would also tell you we're really physically going to have a hard time to spend $1.5 billion, mainly because the limitations on people moving around, contractors, engineers, and the people that we need to execute those projects, I think is going to be a real limitation for us for the year. As far as oil price, you know, the other thing that I think has been overdone a little bit here is that oil price dropping $30 a barrel in this environment. I don't think the current pricing that we're at is sustainable. The replacement values are much higher than that. And what we see happening in the futures market is people are starting to move in and rent very large crude carriers to store that oil because they think this is going to turn around.
Okay. Now, you obviously you're putting your money where your mouth is, as are two directors. You, Jeff Fettig, we know from Whirlpool, Bush, Wesley, you've all bought stock. Just talk about the size of the that you bought because it's pretty impressive.
Well, I bought Friday morning. After seeing Thursday's move, I went in Friday morning and told the office that I wanted to buy some stock, and was I cleared to be able to do that. And I bought 20,000 shares. You know, look, I think this thing has been overdone. The market feels like 1987 to me. I was a sales rep for Dow in 1987, and I saw this same kind of reaction in the financial markets. And at the time, I just took whatever free cash I had, and I bought Dow stock at 24. And it felt very much like it to me that this has been overdone. And I understand when people get afraid and there's a lot of uncertainty that they want to pull back. But I also understand when we get below some very good intrinsic values. And I've seen how these markets can rebound. These oil markets can shift back. We've seen moves like this before when you go down $30 a barrel, and in some cases, by the end of the year, you could be back right where you were at the beginning of the year.
I want this question. Obviously, we're all concerned about health and safety. You have a lot of plants. You have plants everywhere. You have plants in Spain, plants in the United States. What are you doing to make sure? Can you run plants safely? Do you send people home? How do you handle it?
Yeah, we can run safely. So anybody that can work from home is able to work from home, and we encourage them to do that. when you're in the plant operating environment, we have several operators who would be in control rooms or out in the field. It is not a very dense environment, so they have plenty of social distancing, and we've amped up the hygiene within those spaces for them. We're also making sure that our Dow medical facilities monitor health and checking temperatures and doing those kinds of things. So we're following all the protocols that everybody else in the industry is following. We're teleconferencing whenever we can. I might come into the office to use the video conference, but most of my day is spent on the phone, and that can be done from home as well.
Well, look, Jim, I really appreciate you coming on. Most people are running for cover, and you came right toward us and told us a very good story. I want to thank you so much, Jim Fitterly, Dow Inc. CEO. Good to see you as always, sir.
Thank you, Jim. Yep. Take care.
All through America, this is what's happening. And I can't tell you that things are great. Obviously, I can give you the facts. And that's what Jim Fitterly just did. Dow Inc. Mad Money's back in. It is time. It's time for the lightning round. And then the lightning round's over. Are you ready, Ski? Daddy, time for the lightning round. It's over. Tom in New York. Tom.
Hey, Jimbo.
Yo, yo.
25 years ago, I saw you on the subway in Manhattan. I wanted to say hello, but you were buried in paperwork. So I'm saying hello now.
That was our chance. You never know what happened. But anyway, hello right back to you. Thank you.
Care Trust REIT.
You know what? I the healthcare REITs are acting so badly that I cannot. I might see you again in the subway. You might give me a hard time. I don't want you to own that one, but thank you, and you're a good guy. Sharon in North Carolina. Sharon.
Booyah, Jim.
Booyah, Sharon.
I want to know your thoughts on Allstate. Symbol ALL.
I don't want any insurers here. It's just not my cup of tea right now. I think the group acts really horribly. We don't really know why. Must have to do with some sort of financing. I think Allstate's a good company, but I do not want to own an insurer. Let's go to Alex in New York. Alex.
Jimbo.
Yo.
Talk to me about Interactive Corp, IAC.
Well, here you got Barry Diller. This is a good example of a company where I think if you buy it, and you just wait a little while, it's going to be fine. But I don't know if it trades next to 125 or 100. But I like to buy what Barry Diller, I'd like to buy a company that Barry Diller runs. And this is the time when it's in free fall, not when it's just shooting up like a moon. This is the time. Let's go to Ryan in Wisconsin. Ryan.
Hey, Kramer, big booyah from the Badger State. My question for you is on waste management.
This stock's been getting killed. It's gotten downgrade after downgrade after downgrade, down 5 today. Jim Fish does a great job. It's got a ton of cash flow, yields 2. I say it buy some here, put 1/4 of a position on, and then let it come down. Waste management's come down from 126 to 99. That doesn't seem right to me. I think it can stop soon. Buy small, and then buy big as it goes down. Matt in Tennessee. Matt.
Hey, Jim.
Hey, Matt.
With friends in a shutdown right now, can I still take a chance on Orange, or should I wait with Verizon?
Orange? You know, hey, aren't you glad I'm not a banana? I mean, give me a break. I got Verizon down here at $50. When I got $50, I'm getting 4.8%. You got to go all the way over to France to lose money? I got ways to lose money right here. Verizon will do it for you. Let's go. No, not just being a little facetious. It's been a long day. I like Verizon. Let's go to Daniel in Connecticut. Daniel.
Hi, James. First, thank you for keeping the audience engaged in the challenging time.
Doing my best. Thank you.
Okay, my question is about Inovio Pharmaceuticals.
Look, I know these guys. Why? Because they are from my hometown. I've had them on. I kind of like them. It's a real spec, okay? But that said, it's the kind of spec that's working these days. So I'm going to say yes. I'm going to say yes to that one. Can I go to Kathleen in my home state of New Jersey, please? Kathleen.
Hey, Jim, I love your show, and I really love the way you think.
Thank you.
On February 27th, you recommended 10 stocks that you thought should do better and outperform if the coronavirus situation got worse.
Right.
One of those stocks was Shopify.
Oh, I like Shopify. I mean, I know, look, this is a $300 stock, $400 stock. Why do I like Shopify? Because everybody wants to own it. Every major tech company wants to own it. It is not necessarily going to bottom Harley. We had Harley on before. I like the stock, though. I like it right here and then a little bit more lower. And that, ladies and gentlemen, conclusion of the Lightning Round.
The Lightning Round is sponsored by TD Ameritrade.
As we stumble through the wreckage of the second worst decline in history, at what point do we simply say, you know what? This period doesn't count. Our economy's going on a hiatus here. I mean, should the stock market go on a hiatus too? I'm loath to even consider it because I believe it's vital to keep the markets open, but work with me here. Let's think it through. Our markets used to be the place where companies would go to raise capital. That was the whole point. And not just new companies. Since the Great Recession, we've seen many underwritings for already public companies, tons of secondary offerings, insiders. Sure, we've had some IPOs. Last year, we had way too many. But the IPO market collapsed last fall. I don't see it come back anytime soon. And that raises a question. If the stock market isn't needed for companies to raise capital right now, why exactly are we keeping the darn thing open? All we're really doing is making it easier for people to sell if they need to raise cash or they're worried about their companies going under. And look, that's fine. I'm all in favor of that. That's actually why I believe we shouldn't close the markets. But you know what? It's certainly a possibility for some publicly traded companies, but not the vast majority of them. They don't need the market. In fact, many of these businesses, like drug companies, have almost no economic sensitivity. Others have no choice but to stay open. Solos perform vital functions that help other businesses, but the stocks are getting killed anyway. So what's really gained by keeping the markets open as we crash lower? Think about China for a second. The outbreak burgeoned into a national crisis while their markets were closed for Chinese New Year. They stopped trading on January 23rd and didn't reopen until February 3rd. That gave the authorities a lot of breathing room to take some actions. It also created opportunity. If you bought the bottom when the market reopened, you get out a 10% gain within just a few days. The markets were able to catch their breath. Not these, like, ridiculous trading halls for a second. I mean, I'm talking about some real breath where you can say, you know what? I do want to buy that stock. I do want to pick up some J&J. Our problem is that as COVID-19 becomes a full-scale national crisis, our market remains open for trading, and that market's dominated by index funds. So every day, the coronavirus numbers go higher, and the tireless, implacable Dr. Fauci comes out and says we're just in the early days, and you can expect the averages will get hammered, punctured by occasional huge rallies like we had on Friday every time. As I said at the top, now we're having some opportunities, but they'll be created by more bad overall news that drives the overall averages lower. If we put our market on hiatus, like the economy's on hiatus, until this virus peaks, I'm betting many stocks would actually be up by the time we reopen. Some non-essential companies in the travel and leisure space might need life support. But that's true whether or not the market closes. Think about this. Something like American Airlines might go to the single digits while they wait or hope for a bailout. But once the bailout comes, it will rebound dramatically, especially if I got a plan I'm going to talk about all week. If the federal government buys a stake in American Airlines and then blows it out when things get better, we can skip that whole process with a hiatus. Of course, we aren't going to get a closing, but I think this exercise is illuminating. It's why I told you to be opportunistic at the top of the show. There's no reason to ride down the industries that are in the blast zone right now, but most of these stocks will eventually bounce back. Consider the worst-case scenario. Let's say COVID-19 is the Spanish flu all over again, the worst pandemic in this nation's history. Spanish flu started in August of 1918, peaked in October, 550,000 people died, more than all the wars of the 20th century. If you adjust for population growth, that's 1.7 million. That would be an absolute nightmare. But even in the Spanish flu scenario, the worst case, it peaked after 4 months. Of course, I doubt it will be as bad as the Spanish flu, just putting that worst case out there, especially since we have so many great companies working on a cure or vaccine. That's why I think you need to own something here, like the recession-proof stocks I recommend at the top. These some of the stay-at-home stocks I like. Keep some cash on the sidelines. Use any short squeezes like we had on Friday to sell into strength. But please, please, own something and stick with it. I've tried to be constructive this evening, but I want to be sure you understand my view, okay? Not only am I not out of the woods, but, man, if you're in travel, you're in leisure, entertainment, restaurants, okay, hotels, aerospace, bad, all right? Bad. I don't have anything good to say. I haven't anything good to say since the Super Bowl, and I redouble my not having good to say. I do like what's in the supermarket. If you can find anything at the supermarket, by the way. But I just have to tell you, I mean, there's just lots of areas that are in the blast zone. And maybe we get those after we pick at everything else. But those are the last ones we want. And I'm just not going to tell you to buy them. I like to say there's always a bull market somewhere. And I promise I'll find it just for you right here at Mad Money. I'm Jim Cramer. See you tomorrow. Our special Markets in Turmoil starts right now.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. FedEx Ground service is also faster to more locations than UPS Ground. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively, FedEx.